The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey folks, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase Item of the Week. If the Twitter toddler in the White House has you completely stressed out, head on over to BubbleGenius.com and pick up their exclusive Republican voodoo doll featuring the face and body of our cartoon dictator. This item is only available for a limited time, so get yours now, only $25 at BubbleGenius.com, with a third of the proceeds going to support the campaigns of resistance candidates across the country. Plus, if you use our promo code BOBC at checkout, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now, let the cartoons begin.
Stop the hammering!
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Mr. McDowell.
What is it?
Sir, I was wondering, did you happen to catch the professional football contest on television last night?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it was most exhilarating. The Giants of New York took on the Packers of Green Bay. And in the end, the Giants triumphed by kicking an oblong ball made of pigskin through a big H. It was a most ripping victory.
Son, I'm just going to tell you this one time.
Yes, sir.
You want to keep working here. Stay off the drugs.
Bob Seska!
Today's Rachel Maddow Show Award for Headline Excellence goes to Bob Seska.
The Bob Seska Show.
Hello, Bob.
Oh, there's breaking news. Right out of the chute. Breaking news. Right before we started the show, this came down. Oh, by the way, look, it's Buzz Burbank. He's sitting right over there. Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Hi, Buzz.
Thank you, Bob. Hi, I live for breaking news. What do you have for us?
This is outstanding news. Those of you listening in probably already know, but right before we started doing the show...
Right. It's new to us.
Yeah. Word came down that Graham Cassidy is dead. The vote has been pulled. They are not going to try to repeal Obamacare for now.
Graham Cassidy, by the way, was my least favorite member of the Eagles. Doesn't it sound like a guy's name? Graham Cassidy.
1970s heartthrob, Graham Cassidy.
Right. Anyway, he's dead. And yeah, we're not terribly surprised after the week that's led up to it, right?
Yeah, this is all just such great news, especially coming on the heels of three of the most horrendous days of politics in an already horrendous year of, or 2 years or 3 years of politics. I'm so glad to see this news. And once again, I mean, here we are defeating the effort to repeal Obamacare, but then they're going to bring it up again. In fact, what I heard today is, Buzz, they're going to try to roll an Obamacare repeal into tax reform now.
Of course they will, because they never give up and never surrender. As you know, and you know, it's unbelievable that they keep trying and keep failing, but scary at the same time that they do in fact keep trying. This is not dead. This is Gotham, the TV series, dead. This is the Penguin is alive again. Kind of thing. And you just don't know how many times can this happen. And the answer is apparently an infinite number.
Yeah. It's constantly in a state of barring another pop culture reference from The Princess Bride. It's mostly dead, but that doesn't mean it's dead.
I'm not dead yet.
Nope, not dead. Not dead. Maybe dead, not dead. It's hard to tell. Senate Republican leaders decided on Tuesday to not hold a vote on a last-ditch attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare before a critical end-of-the-month deadline, a GOP aide has told the Daily Beast. Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy had been pushing for a vote on their legislation that would block grant federal funds to individual states, but the duo, along with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who is not turtly enough for the Turtle Club, chose not to hold a vote because the bill lacked enough support. They delivered the news to colleagues at a caucus lunch on Tuesday. And the last time this happened where they pulled a vote, that's where I ended up with with this drop in.
Hello, Bob.
That was Rachel Maddow reading the transcript of the call between Donald Trump and Robert Costa of the Washington Post, where Donald Trump called up Robert Costa and said, hello, Bob, we're pulling the vote.
I thought she was actually from that tape because I hadn't heard it before. Thought she was referencing you since you won for the headline of the week.
No.
Which I still do you remember what that headline is? I do not know.
I actually do. That was, God, that takes us all the way back to, I think it was around August of 2009. Uh-huh. And it was right after Ted Kennedy died. We were right in the middle of the initial Obamacare fight, the entire debate over forming the Affordable Care Act. And I wrote an article for the Huffington Post, and the headline that I created for that article was, "Any healthcare bill named after Ted Kennedy must not suck." Then that was my that was the headline that Rachel Maddow praises so effusively.
Rightly so.
In that segment. So there it is. But nevertheless, we're going to come back to Graham Cassidy here in a minute and the entire healthcare battle over this entire ridiculous Republican process to repeal Obamacare for the sole purpose of just satisfying their teeny tiny little crazy base. So, but before we get into that, Buzz, this story was sent to me via Twitter today. It is a story in the New York Times, and wow, I'm blown away by this entire thing. The headline is "How Fake News Turned a Small Town Upside Down." And it's about the dissemination of fake news during the campaign, obviously, during the 2016 campaign. And it involves someone with whom I did my first podcast. I did a podcast back, and in fact, around the same period of time that Rachel Maddow said that I wrote a good headline in the Huffington Post. It was during that healthcare debate in 2009 when I was doing a podcast with a guy named Lee Stranahan. And because it was still early on, podcasting hadn't really caught on yet. And so there were different startups that were capitalizing on podcasting, one of which was called Blog Talk Radio. And it's still around. It's still, I guess it's still doing well. But the way you do a Blog Talk Radio podcast is you can do them live by calling into a number. And everyone who's a host on the show all calls in using their telephone to the same number. And then they broadcast the phone conversation out via the internet, and you can listen that way. But it's an entire podcast format predicated on the idea of using your telephone to do a show. So I did a show, Buzz, with a guy named Lee Stranahan. It was his idea, and I had known Lee through the Huffington Post and through blogging. I think he had done some blogging on my blog, on bobsesca.com. And then we just developed a kind of a, not a friendship, but an acquaintance. We both agreed on the same things during the 2008 campaign. He had done some funny videos, some parody videos online. And so we started this show. And everything was great for about 6 months. And then everything turned horribly awry because Lee started coming out against the healthcare legislation that was being proposed. So what happened with the show is Lee and I just would disintegrate into fighting with each other every single show, because then he would come up with, I don't even know if it was true, but he would come up with things like, David Axelrod is in the pocket of big insurance, and like just announcements like that. And then I'd be scrambled. What the hell are you talking about, Lee? I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know that feeling, and I think maybe some of our listeners know that feeling too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It was like I was doing a show with an emerging troll. And that's what Lee Stranahan basically became. Right. We parted ways doing the show at the end of 2009 and no longer did the show anymore. It was just intolerable to do the show with him anymore. And it was no fun to listen to because it was just the two of us fighting over healthcare for an hour and a half. And it just so happens that one of the last guests that we had on that show was a guy named Ches Pazienza, who I met for the first time on the show with Lee Stranahan. And he talked about his brain tumor surgery and his battle with rehab and his stories about 9/11, basically the stuff that you read in Chez's memoir, Dead Star Twilight. And so that's how I got to know Ches, but I didn't end up doing a show with Ches until 2011. In the meantime, I started my own show with another guy, which we did for about a year. So that's the long story of my association with Lee Stranahan. It just became this fiasco of a podcast that couldn't be, would not survive beyond those fights because they did.
Now I have to ask you here because this will come into play later in your story. And thank you for sharing this article with me. It was brilliantly written, really fascinating.
Yeah,
were you seeing then the early morphing of Lee from liberal to conservative in those arguments over health care? Were you starting to see traces of conservatism in his arguments back then, or did that come later?
Well, what I was seeing was a little bit of disruption. I mean, his penchant, now not to spoil and get too far ahead of ourselves, but as a Breitbart guy, his specialty, Lee's specialty, is disruption. And that's a lot.
But he wasn't with Breitbart back then.
No. But he was.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we got hints of it. And what he was doing was he wasn't necessarily airing some conservative views. What he was doing, though, is he was trying. He didn't start it, but he jumped on board the whole kill the bill thing with regard to Obamacare. And then he also was turning against Obama himself. When in fact he had vocally supported Barack Obama in the 2008 campaign.
So, okay, all right, good.
So there were hints of dissatisfaction with the Obama administration, and it was about, I want to estimate, maybe 6 months or a year later that Lee Stranahan ended up bumping into a guy named Andrew Breitbart.
Right.
And he interviewed Andrew Breitbart for Lee Stranahan's own website. Did a video interview. I think it lasted like 3 hours long. It was just this monster interview with Andrew Breitbart. Very illuminating about what makes Andrew Breitbart tick. But they ended up hitting it off. And Andrew Breitbart ended up hiring Lee Stranahan over at Breitbart.com. And according to the way they describe it in this New York Times article, describes Lee as having been converted by Andrew Breitbart into conservatism.
And I couldn't wait to get to this part.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he'd been writing for the Huffington Post. He was working with you.
Yeah.
He was supporting Obama. And then he goes to work for Breitbart. And according to this article, Breitbart became his mentor.
Yes.
And that Breitbart then converted him to conservatism.
Yep.
How the hell do you convert somebody to conservatism? And conversely, does that mean it's possible to convert them back?
Well, I'm not going to try with Lee, but I mean, no. I do think it is possible. I do think, though, that this was less a conversion and more of a calculated choice on behalf of Lee Stranahan. I never got the sense that he was the genuine article. Like, he was a true believer. I never got the sense that he really, really was on board with the left, because as it says in the article, Buzz, he talks about how when he was in high school, in fact, he talked about it on the show a lot, he went to an objectivist high school. I didn't even know those existed. It's like an Ayn Rand high school. And he, in fact, went to, in the New York Times article, says he went to Ayn Rand's funeral. He attended Ayn Rand's funeral. I have no idea if that's true or not, but I do know that Lee was a libertarian and an objectivist before he was a progressive. And this was, I think, his way of converting back to that by going over to Breitbart, but deciding, let's reconnect with our past here. Okay. I'm also, I don't have verification of this. I don't know for 100% certain, but I'm fairly sure that when Lee and I were doing our podcast together, Lee and his family were squatting in a mobile home. I don't know. I don't know that 100% for certain. I just got the sense that that was happening.
And now he has an office on K Street in D.C. or something like that?
Yeah. And you know who he works for now? You know who he does a radio show with? An FM drive time radio show. For a little organization called Sputnik. Sputnik, as you know, is one of three major worldwide Russian propaganda outfits.
Yes.
So now Lee is in the pocket of Vladimir Putin, and he wanted to do that by choice. It says in this article that Lee joined up with Sputnik because he wanted to do something that will irritate the left. Again, we go back to disruption. We go back into deliberate trolling. The reason he's at Sputnik is he knew it would be, it says here in the article, knowing that it would be controversial. There it is. So how this links to Trump Russia, how this links to Twin Falls. So several weeks ago, I wrote an article about a Facebook group called Secured Borders. This is a major news story. If you follow the Rachel Maddow Show, you're aware of Secured Borders and the effort by Russian propagandists and Russian trolls to infiltrate activism in the United States and to manufacture protest rallies using Facebook groups.
Right.
And one of those groups was a group called Secured Borders with 133,000 followers, by the way. 133,000 followers in support of Donald Trump. It was actually one of hundreds of Russian propaganda fronts on Facebook. And we're learning more and more about Facebook's involvement in all of this as time goes on. It seems like with every news story about Facebook, we learn just a little bit more about what Facebook was doing. But one of the main things that Secured Border did was organize protest rallies in Twin Falls, Idaho, where this town had become sort of a hotbed of activity with regard to refugees and Muslims. Mm-hmm. And the far right making it out to seem as if Twin Falls is now being taken over. And Lee Stranahan, in fact, wrote about this, that Twin Falls is being taken over by Sharia law and all of this crap. When, in fact, right. there are exactly zero Syrian refugees who have been relocated to Twin Falls, Idaho. It just right. does not exist. So the story grows. The reason Lee was sent there, he was dispatched by a guy at Breitbart. You might recognize him, Buzz. His name was Steve Bannon.
I've heard of him.
His name still is Steve Bannon, in fact, for now. And he was dismissed. So Lee was sent to Twin Falls, Idaho to cover the growing alleged refugee crisis in Twin Falls, right?
So even though there were no Syrian refugees, they'd taken in some people from Eastern Europe, but there were no Syrian refugees.
Right. Like, I think what the article mentioned some refugees from Yugoslavia, and that was basically the extent of it, but no Syrians, and that was, of course, the issue at the time. So
this rumor had gotten started in town, apparently, that Syrians were moving in. Since the town had taken in refugees before, the presumption was, or maybe the announcement was, that Syrian refugees would be coming there, but none had arrived. And then came this story that you're about to relate that allegedly involved two little brown boys.
Yes, yes. Okay, so the entire thing gets blown up as this story breaks of an alleged child rape involving, in fact, just three young children between the ages of 6 and 10, if I recall correctly.
Right.
These kids, two boys and a girl, all around the same age, young, young children, went down to the laundry room of their apartment complex. And from what I can tell by the straight up reporting based on that thing, it was more or less, we're going to use our camera phone and we're going to do a we're going to take video of the you show me yours, I'll show you mine game. Something to that effect. I mean, that was basically the takeaway. Of course, because two of these children were brown children, this entire thing got blown up by people like Lee Stranahan into ISIS is raping children in the United States and we have to do something about it right damn now. Yeah, and that means electing Donald Trump.
Right, a horrific gang rape, which is obviously a hot-button phrase for parents in that small town.
Yep.
And they were suddenly very afraid, which was the whole point of this. And, you know, as we get farther into this, before I forget, there are connections between the Russians and Breitbart and between Sputnik and Breitbart that your ex-friend Lee has made abundantly clear. And so, yeah, this is part of a bigger thing. But it started with a rumor in town that the Muslims were coming, and Lee and Breitbart picked up on that and exploited it.
Exactly. So Lee's assignment was to expose the quote-unquote Muslim takeover of Twin Falls. And that also included, the Greek yogurt company Chobani. And so Lee believed that Chobani, this Greek yogurt company, was at the center of this entire scam, because the CEO of Chobani said that he's open to hiring refugee employees at his yogurt factory, at his Greek yogurt factory.
The nerve of him.
Right. So that brings us back to Secured Borders, which is this Russian propaganda front group on Facebook that organized a protest rally in Twin Falls, Idaho, against Chobani. And it was so enlightening to read this article and to see how all of these elements converged. I mean, we've also got Drudge mentioned in this thing.
It was a front page news on Drudge, this story that wasn't true.
Right. So we've got, as I mentioned, we've got Sputnik, we've got Breitbart, there's Lee Stranahan in there, there's Russian propagandists. This is, Twin Falls is basically seems to me as if that was like a test bed for an expanded version of what we saw in 2016, that they used that as really a kind of a ground zero, as a microcosm for a larger propaganda effort that we could see, or that actually did to a large extent unfold elsewhere in the United States. But what we're hearing more and more about is that all of these attempts at propaganda and infiltrating social media was really in its infancy last year. Whereas,
maybe it was. Yeah. Maybe it was an experiment, and if it was, it succeeded beautifully, at least as far as its perpetrators were concerned.
Exactly. And now they're going to hatch all of this into a much broader effort starting next year. It may even be underway now. I mean, we don't know. That's just the problem with all of this. But again, this is just a little experimental attempt at what I think is going to be a larger thing. And the problem with Russia now influencing protest rallies, I can really see this evolving into Russia influencing legislation through activism, through protest rallies, generating popular support, linked up to fake news outfits like Sputnik, certainly Breitbart with its propaganda efforts in support of Donald Trump, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it doesn't take a lot of hops for a bunch of Russian propaganda Facebook groups or social media groups to say, you know what, here's a great issue. Let's make sure gay people can't use public bathrooms too.
Some of those fights, Russians don't have a dog in. Some of those fights, and I hate that expression, so I apologize right now for using it.
Why do you hate dogs, Buzz?
Why do I hate dogs? Why do I hate America? I don't know. And now I forgot what I was going to say because I'm so embarrassed about saying that phrase.
Russia doesn't care about
the specific policies that we do. What Russia wants overall is a disruption of the political process and to exploit the political divisions that already existed in this country. And they did it beautifully in Twin Falls, Idaho.
Yep.
And it worked, and they went on and did it some more. I don't know how much they care about specific policy. They have succeeded on some specific policies, namely the decimation of the U.S. State Department. That's something Putin has wanted for a very long time, and he found the guy who would make that happen for him.
Yeah, and you know what? This is the entire idea that I'm kind of putting out there, the idea of influencing legislation, that's all part of it. I mean, that's exactly right. It's all part of the disruption of American democracy, being able to easily meddle in our affairs here politically and socially and every other way is part of the Russian plan. So by inventing these ways to create activism around, I mean, it could be real issues, it could be nonsense issues that suddenly erupt as a national thing, sort of like taking the knee during the national anthem, things like that, that start out as sort of semi-second-tier issues and then erupt into a big deal, maybe eventually forcing some kind of legislation. That's a major, major infiltration of American politics beyond what we saw last year. And that's one of the reasons I'm so concerned about the Russian efforts to infiltrate social media and to meddle in activism, to actually put together protest rallies, because it doesn't take much effort. Doesn't take many hops to go from a protest rally again to some sort of legislation, even at the state level, to start generating ideas for state politicians to legislate based on popular support, because they see these protest rallies emerging on the far right.
Even the Russians know that all politics is local and have made obvious their focus on local politics. Again, though, I don't think they care what policy we establish. Whether it's about the flag or something else, they care mostly about the disruption. I would ask you this, because I didn't read every word of that very long article about Twin Falls, Idaho, so I don't know. Did the attempts at organizing rallies there succeed? Because I have heard that rallies that were organized online by groups such as the one you mentioned, protest organized by groups such as that, as I understand it, did not generate much, if any, turnout in most cases. I don't know how it went in Twin Falls.
Yeah, you're right. The Secured Borders rally in Twin Falls was not widely attended. I don't know if there were, I don't know how many people actually were there, but the reports say that it wasn't.
And it's important to point out that, at least according to the article, these reporters' assessments of the people of Twin Falls, most did not go along with this zany conspiracy theory about the Syrians and the rape that never occurred and all of that.
Yeah.
Only a few, again, about one-third, about roughly the same percentage who voted for Trump. You know, those are the folks who bit the bait. You know, those were the angry folks who heard what they wanted to hear in that fake news. And that, of course, increases the divide, and that's what the Russians wanted, and they succeeded. And I'm not as confident as I was last week when I was brave enough to be shirtless for the show. This week I'm wearing a sensible shirt and a light jacket because I'm not feeling that secure this week.
I know. I love how your clothing choices reflect your politics of the day, right?
And my mood and my level of confidence, yes. Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know that the legislation or whatever issue they glom onto really even matters. It's just a matter of being able to do it. And what they were able to do, and even though there wasn't so much outcry in Twin Falls itself, it doesn't matter because it became a rallying cry all around the pro-Trump internet that was focusing on the idea of getting rid of ISIS and extreme vetting and Muslim bans and things like that. So it really fed that entire narrative that Donald Trump was creating, and I think that was the entire point of why it was going on, why Steve Bannon was interested, why Lee was actually living there in Twin Falls for quite a period of time before he moved to an office, strangely, across the street from the White House in Washington, D.C., where he's now working for Sputnik, for God's sake. So that's that story. I urge you to go and check it out yourself. It's called How Fake News Turned a Small Town Upside Down. It's really an illuminating read. And it, of course,
fascinating. Very well researched and brilliantly written. It really, really is a good read.
And it involves Lee Stranahan, and so therefore,
yes, so you'll know
it's
you'll
going know, to be. Right. You see how that guy ticks. So anyway, so I want to talk about. I want to make sure we get to the email story here in a second, but let's. While we're talking about Trump Russia, it's important to talk about these latest reports coming from 21 different states and Donald Trump's own Department of Homeland Security, which announced that 21 states had their voting infrastructure had been infiltrated by Russian hackers on or before Election Day 2016. Now, this is bizarre given that announcement from DHS and all of these 21 states individually came on the same day in which Donald Trump tweeted that the Russian attack was a hoax. The president contradicting his own Department of Homeland Security.
He'll deny that until the day of his passing.
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't matter. Again, reality isn't a factor for him. It's what's in his head, and that's what's in his head. It's what's going to stay there, and there's really nothing we can do to change that.
Yep.
Fortunately, we can inform each other about what's going on. Yeah, they waited 10 months after the election, but Homeland Security finally informed. Some of these states, Bob, didn't even know they were on that list. They didn't know. Some of them didn't know they'd been attacked. Some of them hadn't bothered to look, granted. And it's interesting to note that the Russians hit states like Illinois and Texas and California. They hit all the key states. I didn't see Michigan on the list, although it may be because not every state has fessed up to being on that list. But the states that didn't make the list include Kansas, Louisiana, these unfortunate states who have little or no say in any presidential election. The Russians knew that and didn't bother to invade them.
Yeah.
And it just goes to how well targeted, and that's the broad picture. When you get down to counties and districts, you see that the targeting by Russians was even more specific than that. But there's a lot of finesse, a lot of expertise that went into the targeting of this fake news and the targeting of states for hacking their voter registration software.
Yeah, exactly right. And some of the states here included, of course, Ohio, Wisconsin, Virginia, Pennsylvania. These are states that became swing states. I mean, we didn't really look at Wisconsin and Pennsylvania necessarily as swing states, but there they are. And then you loop all of this information in with voter ID, voter suppression, fake news, propaganda online, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the results of the election start to become more and more clear. But the other thing is we really shouldn't overlook the fact that every time we hear about hackers, Russian hackers specifically, getting into election infrastructures, we get closer and closer to the idea of Russian hackers changing the vote. And you know what? Right. Ultimately, and we've talked about this on the show before, but it bears repeating, that they didn't actually need to change vote totals, Buzz. All they really needed to do, which is what they did, which is to change minds before voters walked into the voting booth.
Right, and not very many minds. They just had to change a few minds in key districts, in close races. And I believe they succeeded. It, from all appearances, they did. Some of these districts were leaning Hillary, but it was close. And those districts were then targeted by fake news stories that didn't necessarily attack candidates, but divided people further and made them take one side or the other.
Yep.
And in so doing, you've got it exactly right. They didn't change votes, but they did endeavor and I believe succeeded in changing just enough minds to make the difference. And if you look at the numbers, the number of people who were targeted, the number of people in that district and how the vote went, you can see that that is the difference that was made there by the Russians. Just unbelievable how sophisticated this targeting was. And although we've often thought that they got help, inside help from here in the United States, and they may have, the investigation's not over on that yet. But we're also seeing indications that the Russians have gotten very good at this.
Yeah.
Certainly they have done it in other countries, and they've figured out our system as well. They know exactly what buttons to push, what stories to cite. I saw information that Russians on Facebook had run ads in support of Black Lives Matter and against Black Lives Matter to try to stoke that fire. And by the way, you mentioned in passing the whole thing about the national anthem and taking a knee and all that. I haven't been on social media as much this week. I didn't see you post anything about it. I haven't posted anything about it. And here's why, because it's, to me, it's another distraction from the issues of the day. It's an important discussion to have when we're not busy doing this other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is no time to bring that in. I have my views on the subject, but I don't care to discuss them right now because we have bigger fish to fry.
Exactly.
Healthcare was, Puerto Rico's going under. Yeah. Healthcare was on the chopping block again. And North Korea, you know, war, this is war, this isn't war. It sounds like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. you know, we have bigger fish to fry. Yeah. And you know, to break down and to divide ourselves further again by having this stupid argument over the anthem and all, and the flag and all that, and you know, Trump's right there stoking the fire on this whole thing. It very irritating and disheartening to me, and one of the reasons I'm again less confident this week.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's appealing to his racist base. That's all he's doing. He's just pandering to those people. To
and that's
people.
What the Muslim ban does. Yep. That now includes Venezuelans and North Koreans. And that's what the wall does, which is never going to get built. But he just keeps stoking these fires, and it's all race. Every bit of it now is now it looks like it's all about race.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? Going back to the interference with the election, Russian interference in the election, and these 21 states that may have been infiltrated, I mentioned Wisconsin. There's more news from Wisconsin regarding the vote and how, and this information could have possibly, if it had gone the other way, could have possibly changed the outcome of at least Wisconsin, if not the other states. And we're going to get to that in just a second. But before we do, we have a brand new sponsor on the show.
Oh, good.
Brand new sponsor. It's called Filter Easy. Buzz, you know, you're intimately aware of the fact that that sometimes things slip my mind and I end up missing deadlines or phone calls because, well, but most of the time it's because I'm really, really busy and I forget to write them down or forget to set my alarm or something like that.
Sometimes it's something else, but you know, it happens.
Right. It's but it happens occasionally where I'm supposed to. In fact, there was a phone call that I was supposed to have with the Filter Easy people, and I just sailed right on past it. I just went right on by the meeting. Like, oh, God, it was 15 minutes after the meeting was supposed to take place. And I went, ah, shit. You know what? Damn it. I missed the Filter Easy meeting. But and see, this happens to me. And of course, it happens with things around the house, things I need to take care of on a regular basis. Right. I forget to do things. And one of the things we all forget to do, I think, is to change out our air filter in our home heating and cooling system. And there was one time, I mean, when I was a homeowner, that was especially a problem because I didn't have any sort of apartment maintenance to tell me when right. I should be doing these things. So,
right. And by the way, even if you do live in an apartment, it's something you should remember to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But when I was a homeowner, I would go down after, I don't know, way too long and go check the air filter and the HVAC system. And I just pull it out and it was like a monkey. Like I'm pulling out this fuzzy monkey out of the slot, right?
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. And so I finally had to figure out some way to keep myself organized. And wouldn't you know it, before long, here comes Filter Easy. What they do, I mean, the main thing they do is they send you quality air filters on a regular basis so you don't forget to change out your air filter. If it's been more than 3 months, if you're spending up to 15% more to heat or cool your home than you would if you change that filter regularly, you're also unnecessarily breathing in dust and allergens and aggravating the asthma and allergy symptoms of yourself and those you love. I was surprised to learn that the level of indoor pollutants is actually 2 to 5 times higher than it is outdoors. So if you're
did not know that.
Unbelievable. So if you're like me and you forget to change the filter as often as you should, then you have to remember to buy a new one and remember what size you use and all that. And if you buy more than one, you have to store the extras somewhere and remember to use them. Or you could just go to filtereasy.com where they will send you the right size filter at the right price right to your door right when it's time for a new one. No remembering and no storing, while saving your budget and your lungs and sinuses. So get started today. FilterEasy.com is offering all my listeners their first delivery of a standard 1-inch air filter for free and with free shipping. Never forget to change your air filter again and visit FilterEasy.com/BOBC or enter the promo code BOBC on their homepage. Again, that's FilterEasy.com/BOBC. Breathe easy in more ways than one with FilterEasy.com. Again, that's FilterEasy.com/BOBC.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
All right, welcome back to our Tuesday show. Buzz Burbank is here from Buzz Burbank News and Comment. You can listen on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, or at BuzzBurbank.com.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're talking about the 2016 election and how the votes may have gone all kinds of different ways because of Russian interference. And in the process of talking about Russia, we often overlook the other circumstances regarding skewed election results. And that includes gerrymandering, of course, voter suppression, voter purges. And of course, a lot of the voter suppression comes in the form of voter ID laws, which are completely unnecessary. They're laws created for a problem that simply does not exist. There is, statistically speaking, there is no in-person voter fraud in the United States. I always go back to the stat buzz that the George W. Bush Department of Justice did a 5-year study on in-person voter fraud, and they came up with a rate of in-person voter fraud of 0.0000013%.
That's too much. It must be stopped.
Right. It is statistically non-existent, for God's sake. And then we learned this today in an article in the New York Times, of course, that 17,000 voters, were prevented from casting ballots in Wisconsin in the 2016 election due to voter ID.
Right.
Donald Trump won Wisconsin by 22,000 votes. 17,000 voters were prevented from casting ballots in that state. Trump won Wisconsin by 22,000. So you take that into consideration. And let's say, for example, you know what, we could even be really conservative about it and say that half of the 17,000 would have voted for Hillary, half would have voted for Trump. obviously, it's a much greater percentage of people who probably would have voted for Hillary Clinton, because these voter ID laws invariably target Democratic voters. They target minority voters. They target older people. They certainly target younger people. They target people who would otherwise have a difficult time finding their way to a DMV or to a voter registration office in order to get an in-person voter ID. And some states even have crazy laws where, in order to get a voter ID, you need to have two forms of photo identification going in the first place. So you need to, if you don't have either of those forms of identification, you need to get one of those forms of identification. Then you need to go to the voter registration office and then get your voter ID.
In some states, and many states that have these kinds of laws, student IDs are not accepted. Certainly in Texas, if you are an employee of the state of Texas and you have a state of Texas employee photo ID card, you may not use that to vote.
Right.
It's just unbelievable. And it is important to underscore the multi-layeredness of this. You already have, to a degree, by talking about both gerrymandering, which is a factor, and voter suppression through needless voter ID laws is also a factor. And in addition to that, of course, the Russian interference. If the Russians had succeeded, and if they did at any point succeed in getting into voter registration rolls that we do not yet know about, all they have to do is change one digit or one letter in registrations to force a person to be turned away at the polls because their voter registration information does not match up.
Yeah.
And so it would be very, very easy. Just one digit, one character in the multiple registrations would also make a huge difference. So between the Republicans and the Russians, I'm surprised the vote was as close as it was.
Yeah, absolutely. My God. And every time I see these numbers, every time I see the numbers of Jill Stein voters who cast ballots in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, when I see numbers like Bernie Sanders voters who switched over and voted for Donald Trump, you switch all of these things, or you can take half and half, and you can take little pockets of votes from each category, and suddenly Donald Trump doesn't win the election. Right. And there it is. That's the entire ball game right there. And then you combine that with the propaganda efforts, the fake news, the fake news going back to the Democratic primaries, where Bernie Sanders voters were dissuaded from supporting Hillary Clinton in the general election because of propaganda that they were fed during the primary campaign. So all these things combine, and then, I mean, in the process of talking about Trump-Russia, we do lose the issue of voter ID, which is so pernicious right now, where there are voter ID laws being passed all the time. Some are being struck down, which is positive, but most of the time they're just advancing forward based on a nonsense threat that doesn't
exist. And we no longer have an administration that will challenge those laws. We have an administration that encourages them.
Well, here's an example of the voter ID law in Texas. Let's look at Texas here for a second. In order to vote, citizens of Texas have to present a photo ID or else they won't be able to vote. The ID has to be one of the following. Here's the list of IDs that they can use. A Texas driver's license, unexpired or expired less than 60 days. Texas identification card, unexpired or expired less than 60 days. Texas concealed handgun license, U.S. passport, U.S. military identification with photo, U.S. citizenship certificate with photo. And if you don't have one of those forms of identification, you have to apply for what's called an election identification certificate, or an EIC. But in order to acquire an EIC, you have to present your proof of citizenship and a second form of identification. So, in other words, you'll need to get an ID in order to get an ID.
Right.
That's how it works in Texas. One of the many reasons why this law is so completely ridiculous. And all of this on top of
a form. In some cases, there's a form you have to fill out that no one knows what the form is or where you can find it. Oh, sure, I have one in my desk drawer. Yeah. No, it's not like that. You know, they've made it extremely, extremely difficult. I'm surprised that they haven't made abortion clinics into polling places, because then you could just close them and that would take care of the problem.
Right, exactly. But I mean, the absurdity of saying, well, you know, in order to get one of these election identification certificates, you need to have a form of ID. Well, if you had a form of ID, you wouldn't be going for the EIC in the first place, because you have an ID and that would allow you to vote.
Right.
See, the
right.
whole idea right. is to just confuse the hell
right.
out of people right. who, quite frankly, a lot of people, just generally speaking, can give or take voting anyway. Like, and anything that makes it just a scotch more difficult to vote is enough to say, hey, you know what? Fuck it. I don't have no interest in bothering with all of this, because this identification process in every state that has voter ID happens on top of the normal voter registration process. So there's the complicated voter registration process that you have to go through in order to be able to vote. And then right. you have to go through hell's half acre in order to get a voter ID. And there are some people who would normally vote who don't have access to transportation. Some people who work right. two jobs and they don't have time to spend half a day at the DMV to get their renewed driver's license or whatever. This is just all different ways, again, that the Republicans are trying to stack the deck. They see the oncoming browning of America, and they're doing whatever they can do in order to prevent as many brown people from voting again. And that's where this loops in immigration. This loops in the wall, Donald Trump's yeah. stupid invisible wall, because of, apparently now we're talking about invisible walls, Buzz. I don't know if you saw
it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that's Jesus been a Christ. That's been a thing. That's been a thing for a while now. You know, the thing of it is, Bob, the Republicans are fighting a battle here that they cannot win. And yeah. that is both funny and sad.
Right.
One of my favorite lines from an obscure movie with Elliot Gould called Getting Straight. A college professor says, I believe, to the dean, will you let go? Let go. Stop trying to hold back the hands of the clock. It'll yeah. tear your arms out. That's what's going to happen yeah. to the Republicans who are trying to turn back the clock to 1953. It isn't going to work. In the long run, it cannot work. The world doesn't go backwards. It goes forward. And they're fighting a losing battle there. And, you know, and talking about the voter suppression and the gerrymandering and the interference, and that's just half the story. The other half of the story is the half of America that didn't vote.
Yep.
And I find myself pondering at this moment, and maybe you'd like to address this, of the people, of the 50% of America, roughly, that didn't vote in the last presidential election, how many of them would have supported Hillary, and how many of them would have supported Trump? Who stayed away more? Hillary supporters or Trump supporters? Almost everybody has an opinion, whether yeah. they voted or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Statistically, I don't know for sure, but I think the obvious answer is that more Hillary right. voters stayed away rather than Trump. I think Trump voters were much more activated, whether it's by artificial means, Russia,
yeah.
and or yeah. whether they were into the whole idea of making America great again, and some cranky old coot mm-hmm. who's suddenly now, you know, motivating them based on race and their personal grievances. So I think in that regard, it's probably safe bet to say that Hillary voters were less motivated. But at the same time, you had quite a few Democratic voters who ended up not voting for Hillary, even though they did go to the polls. And that's people who decided to vote for Jill Stein. Bernie Sanders, we just heard this story a couple weeks ago. Bernie Sanders voters in large numbers, I mean, numbers that actually made a difference in some of these states, turned out and voted for Donald Trump as a protest vote. And boy, God, you know, all these things combined. And that's where we get Donald
well,
Trump. That's where we get.
You know,
Donald
it
Trump.
Was it was her emails, Bob. It was all about the emails. And you know, and even Sanders supporters went down saying, "Well, you know, the emails just that cinched it for me. I never trusted Hillary,
yeah.
and this email thing cinched it." And of course, the email thing turned out to be nothing at all. Mm-hmm. And you know, so yeah, but again, I'm setting you up here because it was all about Hillary's emails.
Yeah.
It really was.
It was, you know what? It was more than that. It was about her, because what we found out is it had nothing to do
right.
with the emails, because now we're learning that now, what is it? Six
yes.
members of the Trump administration are using private email for official business. And that includes Ivanka Trump. That
right.
includes Jared Kushner. That includes Steve Bannon, Stephen Miller, Reince Priebus, Gary Cohn, for God's sake, who's an economic advisor.
It's just unbelievable. Yeah. And then you have Spicer's notes, Spicy apparently had the same penchant that that James Comey had at the FBI. They both were prolific note takers, and Spicer wrote down a lot of stuff, and now that's being, and you know, past administrations knew better than to write that stuff down. And now, yes, you have the Trump administration taking the same risks with emails that they condemned Hillary for. But their stated public argument against Hillary was it's her emails and getting crowds to shout, lock her up. And yes, as you pointed out by hitting that softball beautifully, now the tables have been turned, and now they're the ones who got sloppy with emails, and so maybe it's time for us to start chatting, lock him up.
Yeah, and we're also getting this this ancillary story that's linked to the Jared Kushner private email story. You know, Jared Kushner's lawyer in the Trump-Russia investigation is named Abby Lowell. Uh-huh. And Abby Lowell started receiving some emails from someone who she thought, I think Abby Lowell's a she. I'm not actually sure. Now I'm unclear as to whether or not.
Right.
This lawyer began to get emails from someone who she thought was Jared Kushner from an email address, kushner.jared@mail.com, asking what he should do with, quote, some correspondence in my private email featuring adult content. So Abby Lowell thinks that she's getting an email from Jared Kushner asking about some of the emails that he has in his email inbox featuring adult content. The emailer, who she thought was Jared Kushner, asks, can I remove these? And then Lowell responded, forwarded or received from White House officials? And the response came back from who she thought was Jared Kushner. I think one was forwarded from a White House official. We had discussed a shared interest of sorts. It was unsolicited. Oh, then there are a handful more, but not from officials. And then Lowell responds, I need to see, I think, all emails between you and WH, White House. Just for me and us. We need to send any officials' emails to your White House account. Not stuff like you asked about. None of those are going anywhere. And by those, she is referring to the adult content.
Right.
But we can bury it, the alleged Jared Kushner responded. I'm so embarrassed. It's fairly specialist stuff. Half-naked women on a trampoline. Standing on Lego scenes. I don't know even know what is that. What is a? Do you know what a Lego scene is?
Yeah, it's a landscape, a building scape that you create with Legos.
With Legos. Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. And so this is the thing. Is this like Gigantresses? Is that like that fetish porn with the giant women crushing buildings?
Now that you mention it, it might be.
The tag for the movie, and this continues with the email to the lawyer. The tag for the movie was hashtag standing on the little people, frowny face. So I guess it was a what are they called? Gigantresses?
I guess so. Yeah. I don't know. That was not one of mine.
Yeah. Right. I'm fairly certain, though, that there is a porn fetish where they show like women naked walking around in a small model city and then crushing the buildings. And this is evidently
it's not my kink, but I respect it.
Right. So then Lowell replied, don't delete, don't send anyone. Let's chat in a bit. Lowell declined to comment on the record when asked about the exchange. Oh, it's a he. Abby Lowell is a he. He said in a previous statement. Totally makes sense. So it turns out that this person masquerading as Jared Kushner is an internet prankster named, the Twitter handle is Sinan_reborn. And this was a prankster. And
he's pranked them before, the White House. He's pranked the White House before. This is not the first time he's gotten in.
Yeah. It was, who did he also prank? He pranked Ty Cobb. Mm-hmm. I think he pranked Ty Cobb. It says here, the White House special counsel Ty Cobb disclosed information about the FBI's Russia investigation to the prankster earlier this month, thinking he was the White House social media director, Dan Scavino.
Yes, that's the case I remember, yes.
Yeah, so fascinating story about how Trump administration officials, people linked to the Trump administration, are getting routinely duped by pranksters, which really, to me, leads back to the idea of compromat, the idea that a lot of these guys, I think, Jared Kushner, certainly Paul Manafort, certainly Mike Flynn, certainly Donald Trump himself, Donald Trump Jr., are all in the bag by making stupid mistakes with Russians and having right. compromat gathered. So
I worry that they're getting smarter. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can never... You can't cure stupid, I believe is how the saying goes. But in the case of the new Muslim ban, for example, it's going to be a lot harder to challenge this one in court as it was the other ones. Because this one was, despite the fact that it's still mostly Muslims, this one was very well crafted, very carefully researched to find out the security information for each and every country with custom rules for each and every country. It's going to be much harder to argue in court that this is a Muslim ban, even though we all still know that it still is.
Yep.
But it, you know, it, and so in some ways, I see the administration getting smarter. The individuals in it, not so much, and never will be. We still see regularly cases of those individuals, Trump, doing the opposite of what they've been advised.
Yep.
Jared, to name another.
Well, while we're talking about stupid administration things, we probably should mention Donald Trump's remarks about Puerto Rico today. Donald Trump decided that, we're going to help Puerto Rico. And in fact, we're going to get an A+. Oh, nice. We're going to get an A+ on our assistance to Puerto Rico. Even though, Buzz, did you know Puerto Rico is an island and it's in the middle of an ocean?
Uh-huh.
And that ocean is really, really big. this is what Donald Trump said publicly today. Here's your president, ladies and gentlemen.
We've gotten A+ on Texas and on Florida, and we will also on Puerto Rico. But the difference is this is an island sitting in the middle of an ocean, and it's a big ocean.
It's a very big ocean.
And we're doing a really good job.
There it is.
He's such a dope. He's such a child. I guess it looks even bigger with those hands. I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, Magoo. It's a big ocean.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
Yes, indeed. I'll never get used to that. The other thing is, and I, you know, you mentioned the football thing over the weekend, and
it does. It is an important discussion.
Well, I mean.
You know, and it just it sickens me because whether we're talking about the election and the political division that the Russians were exploiting, or we're talking about this, it's race and it's people on the unfriendly side who are never going to change, and that just sickens and depresses me.
Well, the thing with the entire football rant by Donald Trump that started Friday night in Alabama and extended all throughout and continues today, in fact, is that it's a gigantic distraction from the fact. And I've been hesitant to say, to kind of pinpoint Donald Trump things and say that's a distraction from the other thing and kind of try to work my way into those weeds. I try to avoid that. But I really do believe that the entire football thing had to do with pandering to his base and also distracting from the Russia stories that occurred late last week with Paul Manafort, certainly, and also the fact that Donald Trump is actually facing down his version of Katrina. I think Puerto Rico is turning into Donald Trump's Katrina.
And he doesn't know it yet.
Yeah. And so, but in response to an emerging level of outrage about his lack of response to Puerto Rico, where they certain because they are an island, as he said, they have special requirements in terms of there's very limited housing, there's very limited sources for electricity, the infrastructure is not as resilient as it is on the mainland in, say, Florida or Texas. On Puerto Rico, they're very I lived on an island for 5 years, and it is something that Things are more expensive. Things are more difficult to do. Things are more difficult to purchase. Things are more difficult to have.
It's an island in the middle of a big ocean, Bob. Very big ocean.
It's a gigantic ocean. It's the most tremendous ocean you've ever seen. And so he finally did mention Puerto Rico late last night, and it was the most horrendous thing, and again, I always say this, it's the most horrendous thing I've ever seen Donald Trump say, la, 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 la. It's always that way because he's always one-upping himself. He's always doing something that's even more horrendous than the last thing. We're going to talk about that right after one last break. Back with more show after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska!
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Okay, don't forget to use the BobSeska.com Amazon link if you're going shopping. Just go to BobSeska.com and click the all caps Amazon link just beneath the logo. Thank you. Thank you for supporting the show and doing all of that. Okay, so here's what Donald Trump tweeted last night about Puerto Rico buzz. Good Lord, this is just breathtaking. Texas and Florida are doing great, but Puerto Rico, which was already suffering from broken infrastructure and massive debt, is in deep trouble. Its old electrical grid, which was in terrible shape, was devastated. Much of the island was destroyed, with billions of dollars owed to Wall Street and the banks, which sadly must be dealt with. Food, water, and medical are top priorities. And doing well.
Well, first of all, he wants you to know, Bob, he wants you to know how much he knows.
Oh, God, yeah.
And secondly, there's obviously an underlying desire there to smear Puerto Rico in the course of talking about helping them.
Yeah. And, you know, people have been hypothesizing about this, and I don't know if it's true or not, but it seems like it could be the fact that maybe Donald Trump didn't know until recently that Puerto Rico was actually U.S. territory, that the people who live there.
I totally believe that. And it's something I wanted to say. We cannot repeat often enough, even if you know it in your head. We forget. We don't think of it this way. These are 3.5 million Americans who have nothing now.
Yep.
And the other problem that we need to mention is a problem for both Puerto Rico and the United States. Thousands, as flights become available, and they are still scarce, but the flow has already begun of refugees from our own Puerto Rico into the mainland United States, moving to the places with which they in which they have the most family, like New York and Miami. You're going to see a huge influx of thousands, maybe tens of thousands of Puerto Ricans into this country that we're going to have to care for them there or here, here for now, as, like I said, thousands of them head here. This is a logistical problem for both the United States and for Puerto Rico in its efforts to rebuild. This is a horrible, horrible disaster. And Americans forget, and I'm not sure Trump ever knew, that Puerto Rico was very much a part of the United States.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, there are some people who I ran into who didn't realize that Hawaii was part of the United States.
That's insane. That's insane. Just unbelievable. It's one of those things like when people don't know who the vice president is or something. You just can't believe that people are that uninformed or stupid.
Yeah, people used to write to me, "Hey, Bob, when are you moving back to the States?" And I was like, Hawaii is a state, God damn it.
Yeah, I think they meant mainland, but don't know that word. Yeah. So, you know, that could be it.
That may be it. But, I mean, it seems like to me in these tweets about Puerto Rico, there's a series of three tweets, and that's the extent of Donald Trump's mention of Puerto Rico on Twitter for the last 3 days while he was demonizing the NFL, for God's sake. It seems like he's blackmailing Puerto Rico. He's saying, you know what? You have to pay your debts to Wall Street and the banks first, and then maybe we'll think about helping you. Then maybe we'll think about sending logistical support and so forth. I mean, there are many things that he could be doing, for God's sake.
Nice island you got there. Too bad something happened to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things he could do is he could actually deploy naval vessels to Puerto Rico where cables can be linked up to actually manufacture electricity, where the naval vessels serve as giant power stations to power Puerto Rico, because it's without electricity right now. And it's looking like I think it was the mayor of San Juan said that it could be 20 to 30 years before Puerto Rico is back to normal.
They've been pushed back in time by two or three decades. That's absolutely true. And by the way, that idea of sending the Navy there to provide power and other assistance is not only a good idea, but if only there were someone named Hillary Clinton who had suggested that like within 48 hours of the storm hitting,
right,
which in fact she did.
Yeah.
And he still hasn't done it. Nobody's, you know, it's just unbelievable the lack of response to this. Incredible crisis in Puerto Rico, and one that will ultimately become at least a minor crisis for the United States mainland.
Well, once again, here we are, Buzz, with another Trump thing that is not going to resonate like it has, like similar circumstances have with previous presidents or even previous presidential candidates. We have another Katrina emerging in Puerto Rico where the president isn't doing what he should be doing as far as relief for that island, certainly trying to blackmail them by mentioning the fact that they owe money to Wall Street, for God's sake. And then we also have this email story, which, of course, there won't be as big a deal made over the fact that six White House officials are using private email for official business and all of the possible national security ramifications, especially with the linkage to Russia. I mean, how many Russian hackers do you think have hacked into Jared Kushner's goddamn email so far? I mean, more than
all
a few. That's exactly right. All of them have been in there at one point or another. It's a rite of passage if you're a Russian hacker. Oh, yeah, go and look at Jared Kushner's email. He's got gigantresses in there. I don't know if he
this
does.
This is why, you know, last week I was very confident because of huge developments that haven't gone away. They haven't disappeared.
Yeah.
Huge developments in the Russia investigation. Those are still all valid. Those are all still very eminently promising. So I'm still excited and pleased about those things and trying to be patient for waiting for everything to happen there. But at the same time this week, my confidence is down because of the discouragement that you and I and everybody feels when we see this happen, when we see six people using private email addresses from the White House and nobody does anything about it. Trump, nobody, you know, it doesn't cost Trump anything politically in terms of political points. And then we see Trump's Katrina, which shall be Puerto Rico. And we know that's not going to hurt him either because of that. Just under a third of Americans who are idiots, you know, who continue to support this guy. You know, what we do with those people, I mean, we have another election for one thing, and this time we freaking show up and vote.
Yeah.
And try to play nice with each other in the course of doing that. But I'm not as jacked this week as I was in previous weeks. I hope it's better next time.
Yeah, you know, I was really jacked at the end of last week with a lot of the Russia news that was coming out. Seemed like Robert Mueller was closing in on at least Paul Manafort, if not more.
And he still is. Yeah. We can't lose sight of that. He still is. But this latest crap with the NFL and the Puerto Rico and the attempt at health care again and North Korea, oh, my God, you know, it's hard to be as cheerful this week.
Yeah, I mean, God, and just watching the NFL story take place throughout the weekend where everyone's misinterpreting what the message is behind taking a knee, that it's all about the anthem and it has nothing to do with the anthem. It has everything to do with football players protesting Donald Trump, telling them what they can and can't say and what they can and can't do. I mean, look, I don't follow sports a whole lot, but I do know that football players have a very finite amount of time in which they can play professional sports. It lasts a very short period of time, all things considered. Now they're facing traumatic head injuries that could be could create lifelong disabilities and so forth, if not death. And now the president is telling, hey, you know what? If you want to express yourself, you want to express your dissatisfaction with police violence and so forth, you're not allowed to. You're going to be fired. You're fired. And of course, he wheels out that stupid goddamn catchphrase from his reality show, which reminded me of, like, you know, Gilligan, Bob Denver showing up at car dealerships wearing his Gilligan costume.
His hat.
Yeah, exactly. which is the same as Donald Trump doing his stupid catchphrases.
This is very much like the time Rosa Parks, demonstrated against public transportation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. Right? It was just nothing. Rosa Parks really hates the bus, doesn't she?
That's what it was all about. Right. That's how I took it as an American, Bob.
Yeah, yeah. So this is one of those things that has been tried before. In fact, Rachel did a nice segment last night about how this is Trump's version of a wedge issue. And and how, you know what, wedge issues like this, sad to say, they work. They actually stoke the activism and outrage of grievance laden white people who will now maybe be more activated, thinking that all these African-American football players are coming for their freedom or liberty or whatever the hell it's supposed to be. So,
well, it just shows people are easily manipulated, including, of course, Lee Stranahan.
On that note, we'll see you on the Postmortem Show, patreon.com/Bob and Chaz. See you over there, folks. Bye-bye.